The Legend of Sleepy Hollow. Not far from the Hudson River is a little valley among high hills, which is one of the quietest places in the whole world. The people who live there are the descendants of the original Dutch settlers who found the place, and because of the dreamy, drowsy influence which seems to hang over the land, it has long been known by the name of Sleepy Hollow. Some say the place was bewitched by a high German doctor during the early days of the settlement. Others say that an old Indian chief, the wizard of his tribe, held his powwows there before the country was discovered by Master Hendrik Hudson. Certain it is, the place still continues under the sway of some witching power, for the people are given to all kinds of marvelous beliefs, and frequently see strange sights and hear music and voices in the air. Now, the favorite phantom of this enchanted region is the apparition of a figure on horseback without a head. It is said by some to be the ghost of a Hessian trooper whose head had been carried away by a cannonball in some nameless battle during the Revolutionary War. So real has he become to the country people that he is known at all firesides as the Headless Horseman of Sleepy Hollow. Now, in this little valley there lived, in a remote period of American history, a worthy person by the name of Ichabod Crane. He came there to teach the children, and the name of Crane suited him perfectly, for he was tall but exceedingly thin, with narrow shoulders, long arms and legs, hands that dangled a mile out of his sleeves, and feet that might have served for shovels. His head was small and flat at the top, his ears huge, his eyes large, green, and glassy, while his nose was long and pointed. His schoolhouse was a low building of one large room, rudely constructed of logs. The windows were partly glazed and partly patched with pages of old copybooks. It stood in a rather lonely but pleasant place, just at the foot of a woody hill, with a brook running close by. From it, the low murmur of his pupils' voices, reciting their lessons, might be heard in a drowsy summer's day, like the hum of a beehive, interrupted now and then by the voice of the master. Sometimes it was a tone of menace or command. At others, it was the dreadful sound of the birch switch, as he urged some slow-witted student along the path of knowledge. Ichabod Crane never forgot the golden maxim, spare the rod and spoil the child. And his students were certainly not spoiled. Though many a child long remembered the schooltime whippings, when school was out, things were quite different. Then Ichabod Crane was often the companion and playmate of the larger boys, and on holiday afternoons, he would often take some of the smaller ones home, particularly if they happened to have pretty sisters, or their mothers were known for good things to eat in the cupboard. Since his salary wasn't enough to buy his food and lodging, according to the custom, he lived at the homes of the farmers whose children he taught. He lived with each 1 week at a time, and thus made the rounds of the neighborhood. So this would not be too great a burden on the country folk. He had various ways of making himself both useful and agreeable. Occasionally he helped the farmers make hay. He mended fences, took the horses out to water, or cut wood for the winter fire. In addition to these other activities, he was the neighborhood singing master, and he was extremely proud on Sundays to take his little flock of chosen singers to the church, where he felt they far outdid the parson. Now, our schoolmaster was particularly happy in the smiles of all the country maidens. On Sundays, he could usually be found surrounded by a group of them in the churchyard, where he would gather grapes for them from the wild vines that overran the trees, or recite for their amusement all the epitaphs on the tombstones. He was the envy of the more bashful country lads, who hung sheepishly back, awed by his superior elegance. He was always welcomed in the homes because he was well informed on local gossip, and had read several books through to the end. He knew one book in particular almost perfectly, and this was Cotton Mather's History of New England Witchcraft. It might be added that he believed in it with his whole heart. One of his greatest pleasures was to spend the long winter evenings with the old Dutch wives as they sat spinning by the fire, with a row of apples roasting and sputtering along the hearth, and listen to their marvelous tales of ghosts and goblins, haunted fields and haunted brooks, haunted bridges and haunted houses. But his favorite tale by far was of the Headless Horseman of Sleepy Hollow. Though he enjoyed all this while snugly cuddled in the chimney corner, where, of course, no ghost dared to show its face, it was a pleasure dearly bought. For when he walked home later, fearful shapes and shadows beset his path. Some shrub covered with snow would appear before him like a sheeted phantom. He would shrink with awe at the sound of his own steps on the frosty ground and dread to look over his shoulder. Often he was thrown into a panic by some rushing blast, howling among the trees, with the idea that it was the Headless Horseman himself. In spite of these fearful experiences, he would have passed a pleasant life of it, had his path not been crossed by a being that causes more trouble to mortal man than ghosts, goblins, and the whole race of witches put together. And that was a woman. Now, among his musical pupils, who met one evening each week to receive his instructions in psalm singing, was Katrina Van Tassel, the only child of a well-to-do Dutch farmer. She was a blooming lass of fresh 18, plump as a partridge, ripe and melting and rosy-cheeked as one of her father's peaches. Now, Ichabod Crane had a soft and foolish heart toward women, and it's not surprising that so tempting a maiden soon found favor in his eyes, particularly after he had visited her home. Her father, old Baltus Van Tassel, was a thriving, contented farmer. His farm was on the banks of the Hudson, in one of those green, sheltered, fertile nooks in which Dutch farmers are so fond of nestling. Close by the farmhouse was a vast barn that might have served for a church. Every window and crevice seemed bursting forth with the treasures of the farm. Sleek, unwieldy porkers were grunting in their pens. A stately squadron of snowy geese were riding in an adjoining pond, while regiments of turkeys were gobbling through the farmyard. As he rolled his great green eyes over the fat meadowlands, his heart yearned after the maiden who would one day inherit such riches. His busy imagination even presented to him the picture of the blooming Katrina as his wife, with a whole family of children living in the stately farmhouse. For from the moment he entered the house, which was rich in copper, pewter, claw-footed chairs, dark mahogany tables, and a corner cupboard full of old silver and china, the peace of his mind was at an end, and his only thought was how to win the affections of the daughter of old Baltus Van Tassel. However, this was easier thought than done, for more real difficulties were in his way than was usual with an ardent swain. He was not alone in knocking on the Van Tassel gate in search of the affections of the maiden. All the boys of Sleepy Hollow had the same idea and were extremely jealous of any new competitor. There was one in particular, a burly, roaring blade whose name was Abraham Van Brunt. Because he was so large and strong, he had been given the nickname of Brom Bones by the country people. This suited him well, for he was broad-shouldered and double-jointed, with short, curly black hair. He was famed for great knowledge and skill in horsemanship. He was always ready for either a fight or a frolic, but had more mischief than ill will, and a strong dash of waggish good humor. Now, this hero had for some time singled out the blooming Katrina as the object of his affections, and it was whispered that she did not altogether discourage his hopes. In fact, whenever his horse was seen tied to Van Tassel's paling on a Sunday night, no other village lad dared come within a mile of the place. And this was Ichabod Crane's rival. A stouter man than Ichabod might have shrunk from the competition, and a wiser man would have despaired. But not Ichabod. He simply went about his wooing of the maiden in a quiet and gently insinuating manner. As her singing master, he found many opportunities to visit the Van Tassel house and take the lovely Katrina for a walk by the brook, or sit with her at twilight under the great elm tree. But the curious thing about all this is that from the moment Ichabod began paying court to the lady, her interest in Brom Bones seemed to decline. At least his horse was no longer seen tied at the palings on a Sunday night, and a deadly feud rose between him and the teacher of Sleepy Hollow. Brom would have liked to carry matters to open warfare, but Ichabod knew better. Besides, he had overheard a boast of Brom Bones that he would double the schoolmaster up and lay him on the shelf of his own schoolhouse, and Ichabod had no intention of letting any such thing happen. So he carried on his peaceful conquest, and left Brom Bones no choice but to torment him with practical jokes. And this he did. Brom and his gang smoked out his singing school by stopping up the chimney. They broke into the schoolhouse at night and turned everything topsy-turvy. But worst of all, Brom made him look ridiculous in the presence of Katrina. Still, Ichabod went on his quiet way. Matters continued like this for some time, until one fine autumn afternoon, the little schoolhouse was interrupted by the appearance of a small boy clattering up to the school door on a ragged, half-broken colt. He brought an invitation for Ichabod to attend a party that evening at the home of Baltus Van Tassel. That ended the lessons for the day. The children were turned loose an hour before the usual time, and Ichabod went home to prepare for the great event. He spent at least an extra half hour at his appearance, brushing up his best and only suit of rusty black. In order to make the best impression on his lady love, he borrowed a horse from a farmer, and thus, gallantly mounted, rode forth. However, so you will not be deceived, I must give you a true picture of our hero and his steed. The horse he borrowed was a broken-down plow horse that had outlived everything but its viciousness. It was gaunt and shagged, with a head like a hammer. Its rusty mane and tail were tangled and knotted with burrs. Still, he must have had fire and mettle in his day, for he bore the name of Gunpowder. Ichabod was perfectly suited for such a steed. He rode with short stirrups, which brought his knees nearly up to the pommel of the saddle. His sharp elbows stuck out like grasshoppers, and as his horse jogged on, the motion of his arms was not unlike the flapping of a pair of wings. A small hat rested on the top of his nose, and the skirts of his black coat fluttered out almost to the horse's tail. It was this apparition that toward evening arrived at the home of old Baltus Van Tassel. Here he was met by the best people of the surrounding country. But the hero of the scene was Brom Bones, for he had come to the gathering on his favorite horse, Daredevil, a creature like himself, full of mettle and mischief. But what particularly impressed the ever-hungry Ichabod were the heaped-up platters of cakes, apple pies, pumpkin pies, slices of ham and smoked beef, delectable dishes of preserved plums, peaches, pears, and quince, not to mention roast chicken, bowls of milk and cream, and a motherly teapot sending up clouds of vapor. Ichabod Crane's spirits rose with eating, and he was full of good cheer. He could not help rolling his large eyes as he ate, and chuckling with the possibility that he might one day be lord and master of this luxury and splendor. Soon music summoned everyone to the dance. Now Ichabod prided himself upon his dancing, and to have seen him in full motion clattering about the room, you would have thought St. Vitus himself was standing before you in person. And when Katrina was his partner in the dance, smiling graciously at him, Brom Bones sat jealous and brooding by himself in one corner. When the dance was over, Ichabod was attracted to a group of folk who sat at one end of the porch, gossiping over former times and drawing out long stories to amuse themselves. Soon, however, they settled on their favorite subject, ghosts and phantoms, and most of the stories were about the Headless Horseman. It was said he had been heard several times of late, galloping over the countryside. Indeed, Brom Bones said he had been overtaken one night by this midnight trooper and had offered to race with him. He said he would have won it, too, for his horse, Daredevil, beat the goblin horse all hollow. But just as they came to the church, the Headless Horseman bolted and vanished in a flash of fire. All these tales sank deep in the mind of Ichabod Crane. The revel gradually broke up. The late scene of noise and frolic was silent and deserted. Only Ichabod lingered behind to have a conversation with Katrina, and he was full of confidence and hopes for success. What happened at this interview, I cannot say. Something, however, must have gone wrong, for when he sallied forth after no great time, he was desolate and broken-hearted. It was the very witching time of night that Ichabod, heavy-hearted and crestfallen, traveled homewards. The hour was as dismal as himself. In the dead hush of midnight, no sound or signs of life occurred near him. All the stories of ghosts and goblins that he had heard in the afternoon now came crowding into his mind. The night grew darker and darker, while the stars seemed to sink deeper into the sky. He had never felt so lonely and dismal. He was, moreover, approaching the very place where many of the scenes of the ghost stories had been laid. About 200 yards ahead of him, a small brook crossed the road and ran into a marshy and thickly wooded glen. A few rough logs laid side by side served for a bridge over the stream. To pass this bridge was the severest trial, for it was thought to be haunted. As Ichabod approached the stream, his heart began to thump. He summoned up his courage, gave his horse some stout kicks in the ribs, but instead of darting forward, the old animal jumped sideways and ran into a fence. The schoolmaster used both his whip and his heel on the ribs of old Gunpowder, who dashed forward, snuffling and snorting, but came to a standstill just by the bridge with a suddenness that nearly sent his rider sprawling over his head. Just then, a strange sound set Ichabod's hair on end. There in front of him he saw something huge, misshapen, black and towering. With trembling lips he demanded, Who are you? He received no reply. Then the shadowy object moved and stood in the middle of the road. It appeared to be a horseman mounted on a powerful black horse. Strange creature on the horse began riding beside Ichabod. Ichabod was horror-struck, for the thing on the black horse had no head. His horror increased when he discovered that the head, which should have rested on his shoulders, was carried before him in front of his saddle. Ichabod's terror rose to desperation. He rained a shower of kicks on old Gunpowder, but the phantom rode as fast as he. Away they dashed, stones flying and sparks flashing at every bound. Suddenly, he saw the church in front of him. If I can just reach it, thought Ichabod, I'm safe. But just then he heard the black steed panting and blowing close behind him. Ichabod turned his head to see if his pursuer would vanish according to the rule as they neared the churchyard. But as he did so, he saw the goblin rising in his stirrups in the very act of hurling his head at him. Ichabod tried to dodge the horrible thing, but too late. It hit his skull with a tremendous crash, and he was tumbled headlong into the dust, while Gunpowder, the black steed, and the goblin rider passed by like a whirlwind. Next morning, the old horse was found soberly munching the grass at his master's gate. Ichabod did not appear at breakfast. Dinner time came, but no Ichabod. The boys met at the schoolhouse, but no schoolmaster. People began to hunt for him, and they came upon his traces. In one part of the road leading to the church, they found the hat of the unfortunate Ichabod. And close beside it, they found a shattered pumpkin. The brook was searched, but the body of the schoolmaster was not found. The mysterious event caused much speculation at the church on the following Sunday. The people shook their heads and came to the conclusion that Ichabod had been carried off by the headless horseman. Since he was a bachelor and owed no debts, nobody troubled his head any more about him. The school was moved to a different part of the hollow, and another teacher took his place. It is true, an old farmer who visited New York several years later came home with the news that Ichabod Crane was still alive, that he had moved to a distant part of the country, had taught school and studied law at the same time, turned politician, wrote for newspapers, and finally had become a judge. As for Brom Bones, shortly after Ichabod's disappearance, he led the blooming Katrina in triumph to the altar and was thought to look extremely knowing whenever the story of Ichabod was told. He always broke into a hearty laugh at the mention of the pumpkin, which led some to suspect he knew more about the matter than he chose to tell. The old country wives, however, who are the best judges of these matters, maintain to this day that Ichabod was spirited away by supernatural means. And it is a favorite story, often told about the neighborhood round the winter evening fire.